I'm delighted now to welcome author David Murrell. He is the creator of Rambo, the author of the novel First Blood. He just won the Thriller Master Award from the International Thriller Writers, and he is going to be giving a talk on Tuesday, September 14th with the New Mexico Book Association about the present and future of publishing at 6:30 at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hey, nice to see you again.
It's good to see you too. So the present and future of publishing, you've been doing this for over 30 years. Let's talk first about the past of publishing.
Yeah.
When you first started in the early 70s, what was it like? How was it different than it is now?
I started in 1972 with First Blood, the novel you mentioned, in which Rambo was created. And the differences are so amazing, contemporary authors can't really fathom them. And at that time, in New York City, there may have been as many as 42 different publishers. And they were all independent, and agents and authors had a wonderful mix, wonderful opportunity to go here and there. And if somebody didn't like a book, well, you could go down the street. And over the years, since 72, publishers were bought by larger corporations, independent international corporations like Bertelsmann and things like that. And then some of them bought other publishers, and then they bought other publishers, so that currently we have 5 major publishers in New York.
Down from 42.
Yes. And what within those 5, there are, I think of those 5 as being like umbrellas. And under the umbrella, you have a number of well-known companies like Scribner's, Knopf, etc., who at one time were independent and could do what they want, but now are part of the greater organization. And while in theory they have independence, the fact is that if you submit a book to one of the organizations within the big umbrella, you've submitted to all of them, especially if you're asking for a significant sum of money. And the consequence, of course, is that agents and authors have less places to go to place their work, and the people who are putting these books out have begun to, worried as they are about the economy and the fact that books aren't selling what they used to and what have you, you see less books being published, and the books that are being published tend to be of a common type. That the idea to go out and publish something that's a little different really doesn't enter into an editor's mind much anymore.
What are some of those common types?
Well, these days it would be vampire novels, I think. You know, I mean, there's a vampire in the White House, and Abraham Lincoln was a vampire hunter. And I mean, I go around the country and give talks to various writers groups, sometimes at universities. And I tell them that the worst thing you can do if you want a career is to chase a market. And I meet a lot of these people who want to write a vampire book. And I say, look, it takes a year to write a book, at least it does for me. And it takes a year to put a book out, so you got 2 years, and mountains can move in 2 years.
Yeah, there might not be the vampire trend may
exactly.
have peaked and gone away.
Exactly. And but people don't want to think that way, some authors at least. And I think maybe the way to summarize this best would be, I was speaking to a pretty well-known editor, and he said, look, you know, they're firing editors, and they're giving us more work to do, and it's getting very hard to do what we do. And in the atmosphere of concern and uncertainty that exists, they feel that it's a lot easier to say no to something. It reminds me, I knew a head of a movie studio once, and he said, David, it's the easiest thing in the world to say no, and you don't risk your job.
Right,
so
right.
If you're going to say yes, it's got to be for a very good reason. And these days, it used to be that you would take a book to a publisher, and the editor would look at it and say, you know, I like this, and then the editor would go to a meeting of the other editors and describe the book, and they might take him at his word or her at her word. Or they might say, oh, well, let's look at it. But it would be within the editorial environment. now, if they think that maybe there is a book that they would like to publish, they then march over to the marketing department. And they bring in the marketing department and say, you know, and so the first thing the marketing department wants to know is this magic word platform. What's, you know, I mean, we're in the level of nonsense now. What is the book's platform? What they mean by that is, what kind of people would buy this book? How can we market it to a given group of people who we would be assured would really want to buy this? An easy way to explain it would be that if you had somebody who wrote a thriller in the NASCAR area, well, what you would do is market the book to NASCAR fans. So NASCAR fans would be the platform for that particular book. And then what they do is they march over to Barnes & Noble and Borders. Now, to me, when I heard about this, it's been going on for about 10 years, you wonder what's happening to our culture. They march over to Barnes & Noble and Borders, and they say, look, if we publish this book, how many copies would you buy from us? And if they don't get a number they like, that's the end of the negotiation. So we could argue that Borders and Barnes & Noble are one of the biggest controllers of the books that are being published.
And the irony of that is that Borders and Barnes & Nobles aren't doing that well themselves.
Well, that's right. Talking about the present and future of publishing, Barnes & Noble is up for sale. Now, one of the reasons they're doing this is that their stock has been going down as their business has not been doing as much as they'd like. So they want somebody to buy them and take their stock away. They want to depublicize it, if that's an actual way of speaking. They want to take it private. And that way they can do what they want without having to justify themselves to stockholders. Borders is thinking along slightly different lines. Now, what happened there is that 10 years ago, in the book business, they call it real estate. Both of these places have, Barnes & Noble and Borders, have huge amounts of real estate.
What does that mean?
Well, it means they're big.
Floor space?
Yes, floor space. Okay. It's a kind of a jargon in the business. And what they did is they divided, essentially, their floor space, their real estate, into books, CDs, and movies. Now, this was all great 10 years ago when CDs were selling fine and Lord knows DVDs were doing well.
Right.
But as the market for those declined, what you found is that the books were mostly what were doing the business, and that they had a whole lot of space they couldn't account for. In New York, one of the major Barnes & Nobles, they're now taking things off the rack and putting in games. So now it's going to be a book and game store, and the Barnes & Noble across from Lincoln Center, which was a place since 1995, that's gone. That's going to go out of business. So you have a lot of things in flux at the moment, and I can imagine an author, you know, new to the game, just starting, would be bewildered about what to do.
We're talking to David Morrell. So there's a funny thing that's happening, which is, of course, that independent bookstores have declined tremendously. I mean, I remember I lived in the 1980s. I lived in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And in Cambridge, Massachusetts, there was this little flyer you could pick up called A Guide to the Bookstores of Harvard Square.
Yes.
And there were, I think, 24 of them or something. And there was a travel bookstore and a mystery bookstore and all sorts of general bookstores. And I can't even remember all the other ones. Every single one of them is gone.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we're seeing in the last 10 years, independent bookstores have declined by, there are various estimates, by a third or perhaps by half. And there are a lot of reasons for this. One is that many of these people who owned the bookstores got older and they didn't want to keep doing it. And they said, you know, I did that and it was interesting and I think I'll leave. And maybe they couldn't find anybody to buy the store, or maybe they weren't even interested in selling it. They just liquidated. So there is that element. You know, people get sick. There's a wonderful store, was a wonderful store in Southern California called Book Carnival, and I would go on tour there. I loved those people. And I went every time I had a book, I always made sure I went to that store if I was in Southern California. Well, God bless them. He got cancer and died. And, you know, one thing happened and the bookstore isn't there anymore. So, I mean, there are other factors besides, you know, the business itself. But my sense of things is as follows. Independent bookstores do signings far better than Barnes & Noble and Borders.
As we know here in Santa Fe.
Absolutely. We have Collected Works. We have Garcia Street Books. And they know how to put on an event.
And they do them all the time.
Yeah, yes. This is, you're exactly anticipating where I'm going. If you're dealing with Borders and Barnes & Noble, and they're fine stores, and I'm not trying to, you know, we're not being choosy here, but there are facts. And one of them is that when you deal with the bigger stores, they usually have to go through a central bureaucracy, and there's a lot of, you know, discussion that has to go on, and they're not always good on their feet with what they could do to promote locally. And independent bookstores tend to make themselves fixtures in the community, that they're part of the natural events. I know Collected Works, you know, in the Indian market and Spanish market, what have you, they're there, you see them there, and they donate some of their money to the event, and it's, you know, you just sense that they're part of the community.
Well, and they can respond to the community because the director lives in town. We know him or her by going into the bookstore and so on.
Yes, and they know their customers on a level that for various reasons, because of the turnover at the bigger stores, you don't get there. I know when I'm doing a signing, if I do a signing at the bigger store, it feels cavernous. You know, it feels like you're in a warehouse, whereas in Collected Works or Garcia Street Books, just to pick the two, I think, most well-known independent stores in town, you feel that you're in almost a home.
Right.
So, it feels good. And one of the things that I'm noticing with independents is the book tour began about 1985, and it was really based upon what Jackie Suzanne, the author of Valley of the Dolls, did back in the 60s. She essentially invented for authors modern book promotion, and then it sort of went away after her death, and then in the 1980s it came back. And so for a long time it was sexy for an author to come to a town and do the signing because they hadn't seen authors. It was a very new thing. And over the years, unfortunately, that people got used to it. And so you saw less and less draw. So what I'm seeing now is people doing signings for two authors in independent bookstores. I know at Collected Works in January, Douglas Preston and I did a signing together. And I'm seeing that in my travels as a viable way for independent bookstores to maintain their success. I think the shakeout is almost done for them and that they will plateau, and I think we're going to see some strength come back into the independent book market. I certainly hope so because, you know, they're good people, and anybody who promotes books, we love.
So there's also, as the small bookstore, if it has survived, may really continue and begin to flourish again. Likewise, while so many presses have been eaten up by large conglomerates, there's a proliferation of small presses again.
And I am a big fan, too, of small presses. There are many of them. They're not far more than there used to be. And they tend to have print runs of 2,500 copies, 3,000, maybe 5,000. Nobody got rich as an author on a 2,500 print copy. But what if you have a book that you really wanted to write and you took it to the five markets in New York and they said, you know, it doesn't have vampires in it, so we're not so sure about this. You still have hundreds of markets on a smaller venue. You know, the question becomes, all right, I'm not going to get rich on it, but most authors don't. There are only about 200 authors that earn a living as a you know, that don't have day jobs.
You mean 200 novelists?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, thank you. Because there are nonfiction people who, magazine writers and all, that do, you know, they can keep going. But for fiction writers,
very small number.
Very small. You might as well go into, now you can debate the numbers, you know. These come out of, you know, various places that I've read about. But I'm if you look at the USA Today on Thursday, they have a bestseller list, and they have 50 that they consider bestsellers. And that's fiction, nonfiction, paperback, and full-size book. And they have a supplemented version of that list on their website, which goes, I believe, to 200. And I believe those are the 200 people that are earning a living as writers in the United States. By the time you get down to 200 on that list, you might only be selling a couple of hundred copies a week. And that's, you know, that's just no way to, you can't have a career doing that. When you have a circumstance like that, you know, why don't you want to be a Broadway actor? Why not try to be a football player in the NFL?
Or go into banking or something.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot more people employed in banking than there are as writers. So I tell people, look, this isn't a profession, it's a vocation. You have to do it. I mean, and I guess it's easy for me to talk because I do earn a living at it, but the truth is we should be writing books because we want to, because there's something about the book that we can't resist writing, rather than saying, yeah, I think there's a market for it, and I think, you know, people will buy it. I think in the long run you get an inferior book if you take the latter route. So there are good reasons to go to a small press, and your book is alive, it's out there, people are reading it, and who knows what might happen. I was reading a friend of mine, Donald E. Westlake, who unfortunately died a couple of years ago. He's a fine writer. And somebody was asking him about the difference between being out of print and not. And he says, well, if you're out of print, you're dead. And so I'd sooner have people go into these small presses.
We're talking to David Morrell. Now, we can't have this conversation without talking about e-books. Mm-hmm. And there's a... I mean, this is the thing. In times of change, it's hard to make any real major assessments or predictions because there's always all these consequences. One of the consequences of e-books is that while it's harder for a bookstore to sell a physical dead tree book,
mm-hmm.
authors...
I love that expression.
Authors are selling more books because e-book buyers buy so many more books.
Yes, they do. And let's just take a moment to talk about this. To educate myself, I bought an iPad. One of the reasons I bought it was because a computer we were using in the kitchen for email and for surfing started not doing what it should, and I was going to buy another computer, and someone I know said, buy an iPad.
Yeah, that's a good kitchen computer.
Yeah, and it's small, and you know, and you can do a lot of stuff with it, and you know, it plays music, it plays movies. It's an all-purpose device. So we bought a book. We said, okay, what's this going to be like? So you can download on the iPad the what they call the Kindle app, which is for Amazon, or you can download the iBook, which is for Apple. And I was stunned. So my wife and I are looking at this thing, and we said, well, what do we buy? Well, there's a book we've been thinking about. So we went to Kindle. And we pressed, you know, we typed it in, and it showed up, and we did want it. They said, did you want to buy this? And we said, yes, we want to buy it. We pressed the button, and 1 minute later, we had the book.
Right.
And there's a line that Carrie Fisher wrote in Postcards from the Edge, which says, the trouble with instant gratification is it takes too long.
What does that mean?
Well, you want it in a hurry, right? I was giving a talk at Seton Hill University recently, and Seton Hill gave all of its students iPads.
That
was gave. Now, I'm sure that you know, ultimately they paid for it.
Gets built in somewhere,
right? Of course it does, in the tuition. They all had iPads. And as I gave my talk, there they were up there with their iPads. And I'm thinking, why are they fooling around with their iPads when they should be listening to the talk? And what they were doing is, when I'd say, well, you know, there's this book you might want to look at and this book, they were buying them as I spoke. And I was stunned to see how the power of this. And to leap forward, at the International Thriller Writers annual event called Thriller Fest, which happens in New York every July, the CEO of Random House gave a talk. And she said that their research indicates that in 5 years, maybe less, 50% of all books will be ebooks. And
right.
The research currently shows that people who have ebooks may be buying e-book readers, like a Kindle, an iPad, a Nook, a Sony e-reader, those are the four big ones, maybe buying 10 times the books they used to. So we are at an issue here. On the one hand, we all want publishers and authors to flourish, so we're delighted anytime there's a thriving market. And if this improves literacy, terrific. But on the other hand, if I'm an independent bookstore, I have to say, what can I do that makes the print book more attractive? And Lord knows, we are hearing stories about people who bought a book as an e-book and liked it so much, they then went out and bought the printed book. So there are a lot of different ways that this can be happening.
That's a very interesting thing. They liked the iBook, so they went out to the store or to Amazon, bought the printed book,
yes,
gave it away as a present,
yes,
or had that permanent thing there because they really wanted to have their, yes, their hands on it.
And one of the other things to realize, it took me a while to catch on to this. You can read these books on an iPhone, on your computer, and all on all these other devices. If you have... let us pick Amazon Kindle because it was sort of the pioneer of this. If you buy an ebook from them, it's stored in an archive on their site, and you can download it to your Kindle, you can download it to your iPad, you can download it to your computer, you can download it to your iPhone. So you can, it's not one device, one book.
I was going to say, well, that solves the backup problem, because I was wondering if you buy 100 books or 500 books on your Kindle or,
yeah,
your iPad, and then you lose the damn thing.
It still exists on the Amazon Archive site in your account. And if you decide that you've got so many titles on your Kindle and you erase one, it isn't gone. It's merely not on your device. It still exists in the archives at the Kindle site, which I thought was stunning. Now, mind you, you cannot lend these books.
Right. That's another thing about it.
Yeah. Now, I think either the Nook or the e-reader, the Sony e-reader, is trying to work out a deal where for 2 weeks you could lend an electronic book to somebody. I mean, everything's in flux on this. All I know is from the point of view of an author, you have a larger audience. You don't have to worry about distribution. And in addition, you're getting a better royalty. But from the point of view of loving printed books, from the point of view of loving independent bookstores, what you're going to see is a reliance more on service, more on providing events, and that I think ultimately we'll reach that 50-50 mark, and that, you know, the shakeout will... I think within 5 years, the shakeout will be done. Of course, there's always something new that comes along.
Well, I was trying to think of what books are always going to be books. And I was thinking art books, photography,
yeah,
books, and children's books.
Mm-hmm. When you buy an iPad, they're so clever. Apple is so clever that on their iBooks site, they give you a free copy, a free illustrated copy of Winnie the Pooh. And it is eye-popping. And clearly from the get-go, they're trying to get kids,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
to use this device.
All right,
well. You know, and of course, kids love that stuff, you know, more than an adult. Adult will be dragged sometimes into having one of these.
Yeah, and a four-year-old, as happened to a member of my family, taught his mother to use her own computer.
Yes, of course. I wish I could think of the person who thought of this, but it's a wonderful expression that some of us who are old enough speak digital with an accent. And I always try to footnote, and
yeah,
I cannot remember who said that.
That's
where some of us are digital immigrants and some of us are digital natives.
Yeah, I've actually used that expression about dance. Some of us dance salsa with an American accent.
Yeah. I love it. Yes.
We're talking to David Morrell. So there's been a decline in book sections in newspapers. And
mm-hmm.
So people who were waiting for a review in their local paper, the local paper goes out of business.
Yes.
And so for local authors who have books that are not going to be on a national scale, that can be hard. I mean, I think we're still doing well in Santa Fe, but as you wrote on your website, the Great Washington Post book section has gone the way of all flesh and so
world.
On, the book world.
Yeah.
So what, if anything, is coming in to fill that gap on the internet, and what are the opportunities for writers to publicize their work on the internet that weren't there before?
Well, I have a writing book called The Successful Novelist, and
With a market of 200 people?
Yeah. Well, you'd be surprised how many people want to be writers. Yeah. I mean, oh, my heavens, there's so many who are interested in writing, but, you know, how many will actually make it's another matter. But I contributed a new chapter called The Novelist as Marketer. And it goes back to what you and I were talking about earlier about this so-called platform, whatever that is, for a book. Now, I'll give you an example. I did a book in 2005 called Creepers. And Creepers is about urban exploration, urban explorers. And these are people who are enthusiasts about history and architecture. And they use the word infiltrate. They think of themselves as being like in the military. They infiltrate old buildings that have been sealed and abandoned for decades. And in Detroit, in Buffalo, and a lot of places around the country, massive amounts of boarded up buildings exist, which people never took their stuff from. They didn't pull up with a truck and cart things out. And if you can get into those sealed buildings, you'll find furniture and electronics, like a rotary phone,
yeah, right.
You know, old televisions, in some cases, businesses, the files are still there, and doctor's offices, there's sometimes medicines there. I mean, they just walked away. You'd think it was like the plague hit or something. And I wrote a novel, this novel, Creepers, because that's their nickname, about five urban explorers who go into a abandoned hotel that's been abandoned since 1970. All right. Now, when I chose to market that book, I went to Google and I typed in urban explorers, and I got a million hits. And I went to the websites that were the biggest and established a relationship with them. And I gave books for giveaways. I gave them interviews because they're hungry for content. So we had a quid pro quo, and they were very suspicious about how I would treat urban explorers, whether I would, you know, treat them as nutcases or whether I'd be respectful, which I was. I was respectful, and they eventually got that. So, you know, we were having a good time relating to one another, and so I was able to market my book on the web to the very people who would be interested in this subject, in addition to people who like thrillers and spooky things and, you know, are my work or what have you. And so that's what the internet can do that can't be done anywhere else. And for print, you know, what would you do? Would you spend, you know, $50,000 for a small ad in USA Today? Or with $50,000 on the web, you could have a campaign that would practically take over the web. And so what you're seeing is a decline in advertising for books because it's a one-time-only thing, whereas a properly orchestrated web campaign achieves what they call a viral marketing status, where it's like the flu, that it's catchy and it goes all through the internet, and you can't avoid it.
Well, but hang on a second. Mm-hmm. This is the thing that I've always that I'm having trouble understanding. If you're reading USA Today or the paper edition of the New York Times or whatever your thing is that you read, you will turn the page and you will see an ad,
yes,
or the Pasatiempo.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't look for it. It wasn't targeted toward you. You come across it randomly.
Right.
And, you know, the same thing. Even if you're watching TV, you're channel flipping. You come across things randomly. On the internet, people only go to the sites that they already go to. So how can you reach people who, I mean, how do you reach people?
Well, what you do is you subdivide, because it wasn't only urban exploration sites that we went to. So we had a list of a number of different types of readers that we thought we could appeal to. And so we were spreading it as far. We had, while there aren't any ghosts in Creepers, it had a kind of a spooky feel to it. So we went to horror sites. But because it's a legitimate thriller that is not supernatural, we could go to thriller sites and on. Asbury Park is where it's set, what used to be the great grand jewel of resorts on the eastern seaboard. Now it's like Bosnia. And so we were able to hit New Jersey and things along that line. Ultimately, by picking the... I put it this way, every novel has a nonfiction subject, and in some cases more than one. And so if you select a nonfiction subject and then you go to websites that specialize in that nonfiction subject, now you're able to do your marketing and do it very cheaply. That's the key here. And as you were pointing out, you look at USA Today, you know, I don't read romance novels, but I see a lot of them advertised. And so I look at it and I nod and I say, oh, that's pretty well done. And I go on and I won't.
So you wouldn't, yeah, so when you appeal to people who have an interest in something, they're not going to glaze over.
Yes, whereas in print, it's a hit and miss deal.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, car ads. Yeah. I already have a car. Mm. I never look at car ads because I don't care.
That's right. Unless you had a desperate need for one and now suddenly it gets to be interesting.
Right, right. We're talking to David Morrell. So you will be talking about all of this on Tuesday, the 14th of September at 6:30. It's part of the New Mexico Book Association mm-hmm. talks. It's at the Unitarian Universalist Church on West Barcelona here in Santa Fe. So you're maybe hoping that authors, aspiring authors, might show up and learn something mm-hmm. new.
Yeah, I put something on I have a website, davidmorrell.net, if anybody wants to follow up on this and look at that essay that I told that you mentioned, The Future of Publishing. I have also the information on it about, as just as you announced, about where this is going to be. And I think it's not just what I want to do. What I'm hoping is that a lot of small publishers will show up and that I can, as best I can, encourage them in ways to promote their books that they hadn't thought of before so they can get the word out. And similarly with bookstores, maybe that some of those will show up. So we're going to have it's the Book Association, so it's a lot of different types of people coming together. And I had, I'd been up in Chama at the Chama Book Festival giving a talk earlier this summer. Wonderful area up there. I just love it up there. And some of the New Mexico Book Association people were there, and they said, hey, you know, since you live in Santa Fe, come on down and you can say some of these ideas that you have to the whole group. So that's the hope that, what I want to do, I was a teacher for many years at the University of Iowa. I was a professor of American literature, and I'm a teacher. I love to give information. And so if anything I say based upon my 38 years and watching the changes can help anybody, hooray.
David Morrell is a thriller author. He can be found at davidmorrell.net. The New Mexico Book Association website is nmbook.org. And we will see you on Tuesday, September 14th at 6:30 at the Unitarian Church.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR.